This is episode 89 of Extraordinary Women Radio. Welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio. I am your host, Cami Gilner. Women are being called to lead with voice, vitality, and vigor. Each week, join me for wisdom-filled interviews with extraordinary women living out loud and making a difference in our world. Their stories will uplift, inspire, and spark your own purpose-driven journey. Hello, my extraordinary women friends. 2 years ago, as the seeds to this podcast were being planted, I made a list of about 20 women I'd love to interview on Extraordinary Women Radio. It was my wish list. Today, I get to bring you one of these women, and I am so excited. Today, I get to introduce you to Leah Song, one of the founding sisters of the band Rising Appalachia. It's one of my very favorite bands. I've seen them in concert several times and have actually had the opportunity to meet them in person in Boulder last fall. The harmony of Leah Song and Chloe Smith, the founding sisters of Rising Appalachia, has a sense of deep rootedness, playful exploration, and inspired action. Their sound and their message suggests that voices and traditions brought together through song may be one of the saving graces to a world in distress. As someone who loves music and is touched by music, I feel their work is so important to our world right now. In a time when the fabric of our communities and the culture often appear to be unraveling, their interweaving of music and mission, old traditions with new interpretations, creates an atmosphere of contagious hope and bliss. Today, I am so excited to bring to you one of the sisters of Rising Appalachia. Let's meet Leah Song. Well, welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio, Leah. I am so excited to have you as my guest today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be here. Yeah. We finally made it happen.
I know. As I told you when we met last fall in Boulder, you were one of the very first names that I wrote down when I started this podcast 2 years ago as someone I really wanted to interview. And I've just been such a huge fan of yours for years. And there's something about the energy of Rising Appalachia that I really just wanted to know more of the story behind the music, the story behind you and your sister, Chloe. So let's start with this. Let's start with the story of you and Chloe. I know I watched an interview, or it might even been your TED Talk just recently, that you said the first album that you made, the two of you made, was a gift to your parents. Can you tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, totally. We are sort of all based in a lot of creativity, and our folks are very, very creative, and we've always had... We've spent our holiday and winter seasons trying to learn how to make things as opposed to buy things. That's been a big part of our kind of family policy. So 1 year, we decided, Chloe and I decided that we would take the creative task on of making an album. And we thought that would be a fun side project. We grew up with music, so we're always playing just kind of in jam sessions around the kitchen table, and we
and
played
parents,
some.
Your parents were musicians?
Our parents are huge. Our mother is a huge musician. She plays 8-9 hours a day. She's kind of fanatic, brilliant wingnut fiddle player, and she doesn't really play very much publicly, you know. It's really her love and her and her hobby. So we were around music, and there's always been a lot of singing, a lot of round table singing sessions, but our father's a visual artist. So just like kind of oozing art. That's all we know how to do.
Right. And creativity.
So we wanted to record an album as a surprise gift for them for the holidays. And we had a lot of fun putting it together and picking out a track listing and working on the graphics. And we spent 1 day in a recording studio and recorded 12 tracks, and we just thought that would be a cool project.
That's so
and
cool.
And that is the beginning.
Yeah. So how did it go from there? I mean, what happened from that point that took you down this journey of sharing the gift that you have?
Well, so we made that album that's still currently out. It's the first album that we made, and you know, we thought we'd have 500 copies and that would last us for our entire lives. And we'd give them to our great, great grandchildren. And we were singing at a kind of just at a family music party. And the head of the Irish Studies department was there just as a guest. And he heard us singing, Chloe and I, just doing an old ballad. And he said, I want you to perform as part of our annual Celtic Christmas concert. And we'll bring you on stage. And that's a 750-person audience. And it's a three-night show. And they bring in musicians from all around the world to do different styles of traditional Celtic and Celtic-influenced music. And we had never really been on stage before. So that was really nerve-wracking, but we did it. And we brought our like, you know, little box of CDs that we had just made. And this was all kind of just like by an accidental turn of events. And we sold every CD that we had.
Oh my gosh.
That weekend. And we got offered a record label and we got offered a bunch of other shows. And all of a sudden, this thing that we thought was really just kind of a fun side project became a legitimate creative gesture. It took us still many, many years before we became committed to the professional path of music. But that jumpstart started the whole thing much quicker than we planned.
That's beautiful. What's the album name? I'd love to go get it.
It's just called Leah and Chloe.
Okay. Cool. I'll go check that out. So the very first Appalachia Rising song, the Rising Appalachia song that I heard was, Medicine Woman. And it was so funny. Mm-hmm. It showed up just randomly on YouTube one day when I was listening to some music and it literally stopped me what I was doing. And I was hooked on your music from that very point forward. And your music is really rooted in folk stories and folk medicine. How do the folk stories and the folk medicine shape who you are?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that that's a beautiful way of putting it. You know, I think that for us, music has never been like this kind of foreign external articulation of ourselves. It's just the way we see the world, the lens that we process things through. We have had music in our lives so much growing up, and then also the styles of music that we play and integrate, like medicine, you know, has a lot of different traditions in it. It's by no means a linear or even comfortable genre of music. It's got, you know, amazing urban. We grew up with a lot of incredible hip hop and soul and funk and jazz, along with a lot of the traditional Celtic and Appalachian music. So it feels really like part of the fabric of our lives to put together our stories through all this different tapestry of song. And
yeah.
Medicine was really written and it was written and really delivered to this incredible community of folk healers and traditional medicine keepers and herbalists and holistic practitioners that we have known and been in community with for a really long time. And we wanted to literally write an anthem for that movement. And that's the purpose of that song. I mean, it means many things to many people, but for us, it was to champion the revival of herbal medicine.
Right, right. And really, was that something that was clearly in your roots, or was it something that you discovered along the way?
No, we discovered that along the way. And, our roots were very, like I said earlier, very music and art-based, mm-hmm. But also in all of these different southern spheres. And then one of our very first communities that we started getting hired and playing for was this incredible kind of underground niche market of herbal medicine conferences. Mm-hmm. And we met one of the founders, an amazing woman named Rosemary Gladstar, who has just been basically a godmother of returning herbalism, I think, to North American people. And she got involved and interested in our music also in the very, 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 very early days. And she said, I'm going to take you under my wing. I'm going to teach you how to run a business and teach you how to contract yourself so you can get hired places. And she taught us how to not only how to take care of ourselves and our livers and, you know, be able to make sure rest was part of our tour life and how to travel, but also a lot of the business side of being an independent women run project. She really took us under her wing. So,
and having mentors like that is so important, isn't it?
It was so, I mean, I remember when she hired us and she paid for our flight and we literally were completely disoriented. Like, what? You can get your travel covered? What a phenomenon, you know? We just figured we needed to hustle like in every capacity possible. So like these tiny things.
Yeah, let's talk about that because, you know, so many of my listeners are entrepreneurs and, you know, they're building their businesses and it isn't about the hustle. And I know that Rising Appalachia really reinvented how music is done in the music world. You approached it, I'm trying to remember, that it's like the slow move is what you call that. It's like you stepped into a different vibe than what the stereotypical musicians did and, you know, the kind of the crazy life that stereotypical musicians live in. You decided to do it different. And it might have been from this woman teaching you how to do this differently. How is this? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that we started the slow music movement and we also started something called the Rise Collective. And the Rise Collective originally was to really highlight all of the different people who have impacted our lives. I don't think we could ever take credit for the way that this work has evolved because so many people have come in and influenced us and been allies and mentors to us, and it's kind of evolved over time. So Rosemary Glasser was one of those. We spent a long couple of seasons touring in Europe, primarily in southern Italy. We have a huge community of friends and family over there, which is where the slow food movement started. You know, we toured with a circus ensemble over there where everybody lived in their caravans and put up tents and stayed in small villages for 2 months at a time. And that was really, really influential to us to understand how to tour with creativity and with art in a way that's different than the American system. You know, I think that it's very, very obvious that North America is having a hard time piecing together sustainability. I mean, it kind of feels like an apocalypse is upon us, and you don't have to go very far in any direction outside of the borders of the U.S. to see a whole lot of other interesting, nuanced, different, slower, more vital ways that people are doing things. Mm-hmm. So we spend a lot of energy going upstream, honestly. I mean, we try and do things differently, and we try and create a space where we have more of an intimate relationship with the places that we are, with the people that we tour with our audiences. And it's always an uphill battle. You know, the real hustle is, you know, play a show and drive for 10 hours and play a show and drive for 10 hours and repeat over and over and over again. So we've been just pulling back on the reins all the time. We toured by train. We toured by sailboat.
Oh, cool.
We try and do a lot of regional stuff, and we also are part of the beast that is the music industry. And I think, you know, learning how to balance your battles is really important. So we try and just like have a wide perspective on all of it. Do the parts in the music industry that we'd like to do well, and do them as solidly as we can, and then create a whole lot of space to be doing things differently.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things I really admire about you guys is that last fall when I met you in Boulder, right? It was like you had taken extra time in Boulder to do some really good, to come in and support the, to build relationships in the communities that you're touring to, but also as a modern movement maker with cause and purpose, where you're connecting into nonprofits or causes that you care about, and you're getting involved and engaged in the community. And that I think is really admirable, because that is what's shifting up how as musicians, as people with influence, right? You've got influence. You're leveraging your influence to really help the communities that you're going to. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, Chloe and I, and also our entire band, our drummer Biko and our guitarist David, all four of us have come into music with a background of activism, environmental and social justice, racial equity, human rights work, food desert research, political theater. We've all come into music with that also in our background, all mm-hmm. four of us from different okay. walks of life. And okay. so I think becoming a band and beginning to perform, we never sort of intentionally started putting activism into our work. That was in the bedrock of everything that we were doing in our upbringing and our songwriting, you know. And I think activism and social justice can look different for a lot of people, but I think that we are looking at so many situations in this planet that feel dire. And I think it's really just a matter of finding ways to be building bridges and having conversations and figuring out, for us, we don't want to make art for art's sake. We want to really figure out, if 700 people are going to show up and have a dance party and come to our concert and buy tickets, thank you all, everyone who does that, you know, right. How can we also catalyze those 700 people to know a little something more about what's going on locally?
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to be browbeating. It doesn't have to be a political rally. It can be, how can we catalyze that energy and get people a little bit more information or a little bit more networking about a project that's going on locally, or inspired to actually just have conversations with strangers that
right.
maybe they don't know. So,
right.
you know, I think that's sort of the very least that we can do with
yeah.
the amount of platform that we have. And at the best, we can do a lot more. We've rallied and gotten our team to do entire concerts in the Colorado prison system, which was an
right.
incredibly life-changing experience. And we've been able to do all full, like, 14-hour volunteer days in local community farms and urban farms, and turn abandoned lots essentially into verdant vegetable gardens, which has been really exciting. So there's a whole span of things, but it's really, really kind of part of, I think, our belief system. Nobody wants to be a rock star in our team. We want to figure out how to live whole and fulfilling lives, and how to make an impact of any of it, tip the pendulum just a tiny bit back towards sanity.
Right, right. And I think this kind of intentionality that you're taking with this is really, you know, for anyone, you know, anyone listening, it's like, how can you be intentional in making an impact and connecting with people and connecting with community and leveraging whatever it is they're putting out into the world to do good with that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like so many people ask us, you know, what can I do? And mm-hmm. and I mean, I'm a fairly, let's see, how do I explain this? My thinking isn't really linear, so I'm not the best person for anyone to ask for that kind of advice. You know, what do I do, or what can I do? But I also think there are so many places where the wound is really obvious. I mean, I don't mean to sound overly woo-woo about it, you know, but there's just a lot of drudgery and exhaustion and injustice going on in every direction you look. And so I think instead of people figuring out, you know, where should I make an impact or what can I do? You can get so overwhelmed. I mean, right. Really everyone
feels. Because it's such a big question, right?
Yeah, you're so overwhelmed. And I actually think if every one of us just looked at our lives and figured out where we could make impact in a way that's already accessible, like that's how we try and look at it. Okay, what can we do with the dynamics of our job, you know, that is already accessible and fairly reachable within our lives, because everybody's overwhelmed and overworked.
Right.
You know, and if every one of us just find those little crossroads where we can, you know, if you're a parent, then you volunteer at the school and you really do a lot of work to make sure that the library contains authors of all different races and classes and religious ethnicities, so that the school has a wide girth of resources. Or if you live on the coast, then you help organize a single day beach cleanup. I mean, there's just so many little gestures that we can all be doing to create more allegiance and more empowerment and more equity and justice.
That's awesome. So your resilient tour came out at a time in our nation that, you know, it was probably the timing of that was very divine, right? I think that the songs that you brought in that year, the song that, you know, I am resilient, the hashtag I am resilient, all was very timely, right? And what does resiliency mean to you? And why do you think that was such an important time for those messages to come out?
Yeah, wow. I mean, that was such an interesting tour for us, because we named that tour Resilient before anybody had any idea what was going to go down politically.
Right.
I mean, we spend a lot of time piecing together the titles of our tours, and it's like this place where we get the thesaurus out and find language that feels appropriate to the spirit of the music and the layout of the land. So that tour was named Resilient for a whole myriad of reasons that didn't really, it ended up being like this strange sort of foreshadowing what actually was going on. And when the politics shifted and the election went down and half the country was literally, I mean, there are many words that I probably shouldn't use on this podcast for the, I think, the state of many people's spirits and levels of frustration.
I saw an interview that you talked about those first couple concerts after the election, just the energy of the room that you felt.
Right? I mean, yeah, people came in the room just literally devastated. And we were devastated every single day. I mean, it was like a zombie state. Everyone was so hollow and devastated. There's really not another word for it. And
but then you had the music that could lift people up out of that, right?
And and we physically witnessed it happening every single night. It happened to us and it happened to the audience. It was really cathartic, and it wasn't the plan. You know, the plan was to have a rowdy tour, and you know, I was kind of hoping that I would eventually be like moving in the direction of getting off the road some and getting a more of a physical art studio going. You know, we all had sort of plans with our lives. We were hoping to wind down, and then that tour happened, and we witnessed the absolute power, not only of the music itself, because I think it's wider than that, but just the power of gathering. And how often in our culture right now, people aren't in physical space with each other anymore. You shop online, you know, everybody has a car, there's no public transportation. Well, there's some, but it's limited. You know, there's not public gatherings or religious gatherings as frequently. There's not community dances. There's just everyone is getting more and more insular and more in their solitary bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the very, very, very least, if nothing else at all, it was very empowering and emboldening to see hundreds of people show up at the door in horrible and anxious moods, and then literally be festive together and get to dance and cry and stomp and rage and get all that energy out. And I mean, I just could physically feel it night after night. And that, I think that left our whole team with a lot more drive and a lot right. more clarity and a lot more focus about moving forward and creating more work and continuing to be.
Well, I'm thankful touring. For that. I'm very thankful.
Yeah.
For that. And what's resiliency mean to you? I mean, when you think about the word resiliency, what does that mean?
Well, I've looked up the definition so many times that I have a really clear understanding of it now. But my favorite part of its definition is that it's the idea that something can bend without breaking, mm-hmm. and that it can go through, it can basically be damaged and then return to its natural shape.
Okay.
And so I think about that in the sense of, you know, spiritually and physically, and in the, you know, the sense where in the civil rights movement, where there was so much physical battery and still to this day where we're seeing bodily injury happening to people based on race and ethnicity and religion and knowing that actually there is a possibility and a power to be able to withstand damage and violence to the body and to the spirit and return to your natural shape. It does not have to be the end of your wholeness, you know? Yeah. And I think that's been a really important reminder as times get harder and harder, you know, that you can take a lot on and still return to joy and return to a sense of balance and return to a sense of wholeness.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's beautiful. That's totally beautiful. Okay, so I have to ask you about your spiral tattoo, which is the coolest tattoo I've ever seen. I'm just going to tell you that. Many of my listeners know that my book is called Fire Dancer, Your Spiral Journey to a Life of Passion and Purpose. So I have my own journey with the spiral. And you know, the golden spiral energy and all that's around us. I feel I'm constantly playing in spiral energy. And can you tell us a little bit more about the meaning behind your spiral tattoo and what it, you know, what is it a reflection of for you?
Yeah. Well, nobody has ever asked me that on the mic.
Ah.
It means a lot to me. I have a very dear friend that does a lot of my tattoo work, and we get together and we read poetry and draft all kinds of art and put together a whole myriads of layers of ideas around it. So for starters, you know, that the process of being tattooed is already a really personal and really kindred process. I don't go to a random studio, and you know, it's a really personal journey. And I got this tattoo after I had been living in New Orleans after Katrina hit and doing a lot of rebuilding work in New Orleans. And I had also prior to that been living in India and working in a women's orphanage, a girl's orphanage. I'd been working in the prison community in Atlanta in my hometown. And I had just spent years and years touring part-time and then really working very, very deeply in upturning and fighting oppression. And I got to a place in my life where I was so unbelievably exhausted. I was physically tired. I was emotionally tired. I was deeply depressed. I wasn't sure if any of it was making any difference at all, if there was any possibility that impact could be changed, because every direction that I was working in was large scale, mm-hmm. you know, and trying to overturn enormous oppressive institutions. Uh-huh. And I was having, I was very daunted by it. And right. so I realized that I needed a whole entire process to get my, to get that weight off of my body. And I needed like a physical, I needed a physical cathartic, potentially painful ritual to get the weight of the world physically off of my shoulders.
Wow.
And I designed that piece with a lot of other references. You know, the spiral is very ancient, and it has references in Celtic traditions and in many, many African traditions and in a lot of the native and indigenous traditions and basically cultures all around the world. The spiral is part of their
Absolutely.
Creation ethos. It's part of their death ritual. And so it has a lot of power. It is also the mark of the top of the fiddle. My mother is a fiddler.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Top of the fiddle.
Okay.
Yeah. So it has like many, it had many visual components, but I wanted that physical process to, and it was it's like a 9-hour tattoo. We started at midnight and we tattooed till dawn and then some.
Wow. And it was to pull that weight of the world physically off of you, which is just amazing.
Yeah. It's not like it instantly worked, you know,
right.
It's not, I don't think it's that easy, but I do think it worked.
Right.
I mean, I really do. I think ritual is powerful, and I
Absolutely.
Think we don't have very much of it. And I think what it did was it was extremely painful. And then it gave, you know, every time I see it in any mirror, which is all the time, I have just this little flicker of a memory of
right.
what I wanted to embody and what I wanted to release.
And so beautiful.
I do. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank I think
you
it
for
worked.
Sharing that story
I don't know
with us.
Everybody needs like a 7-hour tattoo to process that. I mean, each to their own, but I think, you know, whatever you need to shake up your own stuff, you know?
Yeah. What kind of rituals do you bring into your world? Especially given that you are on the road, you're on the go so often, what are some of the kinds of rituals you bring into your life on a regular basis?
Well, I've been, I guess, I don't know if lucky is the right word. I've always been fascinated and a student of world religion.
Mm-hmm.
And I've studied a lot of different pieces of religion. I find religion very fascinating, and I find it the depth of the human study and seeking really interesting. And so I have pieced together like little pieces of many different practices that I have over time kind of built as my own altar box. You know, I have deep respect for a lot of the yoga and mindfulness traditions, and I think that they're incredibly, incredibly powerful and thousands of years old, and a reason that they work and have caught fire in the West. So I have a lot of mindfulness practices. I have a lot of personal just writing practices. I'm an obsessed walker. I'm walking now. I walk mm-hmm. all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
And you're out in nature.
I think it's probably like, yeah. Oh yeah. And I live in the city,
mm-hmm.
But I have always been sort of only 1 foot urban. I like to be barefoot, and I like to be as far out in the wild as I can get. So I stay in the city so that I have the human diversity, which I really love. I love being around all different kinds of people. And then I have to stay pretty much as far out in the wild as I can. So I'm always chasing the two.
Well, I love that we can hear the birds in the background on this interview, because it's, it feels really, it just feels really connected. So I love that. So thank you.
Yeah. They're going pretty wild out here too. It's probably quite loud.
Yeah. Well, it's part of what I love. I mean, I think the more we can be in nature, the more we can be barefoot on the ground, the more we can, create space for ourselves to connect to the earth like that. I think it's really incredibly powerful. So how do you feed the creative? How do you feed the creative in you in the midst of, you know, everything that you're doing?
Well, I have gone through phases where I have felt like my creative self is sort of atrophying because my hustler self is, you know, kicking ass.
It's a balance, right? It's totally a balance.
My inner hustler businesswoman is just like going to town. So my little creative self is like, because they don't work together.
Right.
They are really counterintuitive energies. I feel like creativity comes when you have lots of extra space and time. You can't rush it. You often need to just sit in a half bored state and stare at your canvas or your paper or your medium and sort of wait. And hustling is really the sort of the opposite.
You've got
500 calls and you're working all the time and moving all the time and answering millions of emails. And so for me, I have to isolate myself completely. Okay. I have to get out of the world to get back to my creativity, to my deepest creativity. I mean, I think my whole lens on the world is creative. I'm sort of obsessed with how I put food on a plate, you know? So
yeah,
it's in there, but to get to the deeper part, I really do have to go into some isolation, and I will try and make space and time for artist residencies. We're going to spend about a month next month in South America, and that will be a space where we won't have access to a lot of our phones and computers, and we'll be doing a lot more backcountry traveling.
Lovely.
And I have to just force it on myself. I have to shut down shop and
I think that happens for a lot of us, is we have to, you know, kind of back out of it. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Can you describe where the notes come from for you when they come to you? When you're
in the words from the song?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's like zero rhyme or reason to it at all. Zero. Sometimes like a whole song comes. I mean, songwriting isn't my first love. My first love is visual art. And so visual art is coming all the time.
Okay.
Songwriting has been really interesting. It's like sometimes they just plop out as a whole song.
Okay.
And sometimes I'll get like three lines and I'll sit on them for 2.5 years and then they'll get integrated into some other part of a song, and then the rest of it will evolve, or Chloe will come with half of a song and then they'll fit together perfectly. There's no rhyme or reason. We've never really had any formal training, which would probably be really interesting if we got schooled on, you know, songwriting. But it's just,
I think it comes through you naturally. Yeah, I think it comes through you very naturally. Yeah. And so let me see, we're gonna run out of time here. So What do you think the world needs right now? What's your role in it? I mean, looking at the world from a big picture perspective, you know, what does the world need right now?
Well, it's what an interesting question. I think the world needs, just off the cusp, the reason that I have chosen to live in a city is because I'm afraid that if everybody that has the equity and privilege is able to go out and buy 5 acres and build a home in the country, that we're going to lose wild spaces. So I think the world needs really intelligently designed urban places where we are all living communally and collectively and learning about one another, and then keeping our wild spaces as wild as possible. Mm. And I think the world massively needs to understand that there isn't like a us against them.
Right.
It doesn't, It's creates scarcity and it creates fear. And I actually think at a baseline, it's hard to feel that way because we're in this time where there's so much violence and this uprising of the white supremacy movement, which feels like an apocalypse has gone totally, totally crazy. And, you know, there's gang violence and there's terrorism. There's all these things where it's like, wow, how do you align with with someone, these people, you know, that situation. But I do really think that that's doing us a disservice as humanity and, you know, as humans across humanity, and that we need to find ways to make honest and authentic and deep friendships with people that look differently than us and think differently than us and have different religious backgrounds and you know, different sets of principles, and make those friendships and build those bridges. I think that's where we learn how to be empathizing with each other, is not from reading about it or from feeling sorry for or angry towards something, but to have actually friendships in our lives that give us perspective.
That cross the different spaces and different, you know, ways of being. So totally agree with you on that. That's beautiful. That's totally beautiful. So where can people learn more about Rising Appalachia, and when are you going to be back in Colorado?
Yeah, you can learn more about us all over the web. We have a semi-functional website, risingappalachia.com, and we do our best to keep up with social media. We have Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes we're more present on it than other times.
Sure.
But we are in the process of getting ready to release a brand new album. And that is really exciting. We're going to spend the next 6 months getting lots and lots of information out and releasing some singles and telling a lot of the stories. And so I think we're going to be a lot more active coming pretty soon. And we're really, really excited about the new work. So
that's exciting. And where can people see some of your art, your physical art?
My visual art is still fairly tucked into the back burners. I have done some of the images on some of our most recent singles.
Mm-hmm.
Handsome Molly and our live version of Scale Down are both pen and ink drawings that I did. And I have about 4 prints that are available on our web store right now.
Okay.
So you have to do a little bit of digging. It doesn't have its own lay of the land right now.
Yeah. But I'll do some digging. I'll go check that out.
Yeah.
So the final question I always end these with is what 3 pearls of wisdom can you leave with our audience today?
Yeah, that's a good one. 3 pearls of wisdom. So a pearl is small and dense and shiny.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we've already dug up some pretty good ones. You know, make friends with people that have a whole different set of circumstances than your own.
Mm-hmm.
Read a good bit more poetry.
Oh, I like that.
You know, I think in this era of our country, for me, it feels really, really, really empowering and important, and also daunting, that those of us that sit within a position of comfort or privilege of any sort, and there's many levels of that, that we use our voices to eliminate some of the oppression that is becoming more and more apparent that goes out towards people who do not have that kind of power in this country along many, many, many lines, you know, language and ethnicity and race. And it's looking daunting. It feels scary and it feels like it's backpedaling. And I think a whole lot of people with a whole lot of power can stand up and say, oh, no, 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 we're not letting the country go back in this direction, you know?
Right.
It's not necessarily something that we all feel in our daily lives, but many people feel it every day. And I think those of us that don't feel it, but have some leverage, need to stand up now, you know?
I totally agree with you. And I think that calling to anyone who feels that calling to step up, to share their voice, to, they are being called to do that, you know, in whatever format, whatever way, whatever platforms that they have. And I think it's really, really important right now. So I would totally agree with that.
Yeah.
So my final,
it looks many ways.
My final request for you, it would be, could you do a short little tune for us?
I knew that one was going to come too. That's
right.
I was thinking, even though it's a little bit off subject, because we've kind of dug into some good depths, but I'm in the sun, so I'll sing you a little piece of this new song that we have coming.
Oh, cool.
It's called Sunny Days. And it goes, oh, sunny days, you rest my soul. You make it easy to see the gold. Oh, sunny days, you rest my soul. You make it easy to see the gold. Just a little zygote.
That was lovely. Thank you so much. I'm clapping here on this end. So thank you for giving us that closing. This has been such an honor, Leah. I'm so honored to have you here with us. And I'm glad we were able to make it happen. And thank you so much for taking time with us today.
Thank you. Thanks for making it happen and being patient.
Oh, you bet. You bet. Well, you have a great day.
All right. You too.
Okay, bye.
Take care.
I hope you liked this episode of Extraordinary Women Radio. If you did, please share this podcast with your own special tribe of women and help spread the love, the dreams, and the inspiration. Are you ready to raise up your voice, your visibility, and your business? I invite you to visit me at CammieGelner.com to find out how you can make heartfelt connections to mindful strategies to ignite an abundant flow of cash and clients into your business. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media channels. I'm on both Facebook and Twitter. Till next time, my friend, listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and be you.